Chapter 8. Prepare. You heard correctly, listener. Senator Adrian Jeffries has broken ranks and is blowing the whistle on what he calls unconscionable government tactics. The senator has accused the government of significant human rights violations against infected citizens and protesters alike. For many of you, this will not come as a shock, but as a bitter confirmation of what you've been suspecting for days, if not weeks. There is nothing this depraved regime won't do to stay in power. The senator has confirmed the existence of secret labs, claiming that infected people are effectively tortured in them before their blood is harvested. This, he claims, is happening despite the fact that a better, humane alternative has been discovered. I regret to tell you, it gets worse. I know how many of you are searching for missing loved ones, friends, and neighbors. The police have been arresting peaceful protesters from our movement with no legal grounds to do so. I must inform you now that according to Senator Jeffries, the government has begun executing these brave political prisoners without trial. Most sickening of all, they're being fed to captive creatures. The government hasn't just failed to protect us from the beasts, now they're doing the predators' work for them. It is the ultimate betrayal. It is our understanding that the senator himself has become infected in the line of duty and has since reported to the hospital where he will be processed alongside fellow infected citizens and political prisoners. He has urged members of the People's Voice to act peacefully but decisively and has insisted that our only hope against the creatures is to stand united. Rhea will be joining us later to give her thoughts on the senator's revelations, and we'll be replaying our interview with the senator in full at the top of the hour. We've again asked the government to comment on these fresh allegations, but they've responded by arresting our reporter. We will not tolerate this treatment. We will stand up. We will be heard. We are the People's Voice. The station belted out a series of rousing anti-establishment classics as Lucy's group traversed the divided city. She felt deep relief that Adrian had fulfilled his promise, but she feared what would happen to him next. He was going to deteriorate quickly. There were only two options for him in the coming hours: end up in one of Harvey's private labs or be shipped to the farm. She didn't know which was worse. Guilt boiled within her. What would Dan say if he knew what she'd done? She could feel the tears forming across her eyes. Her knuckles turned white as she dug her fingertips into her thighs.
"You okay?"
said Maurice, leaning forwards from the back row.
"Go to hell,"
said Lucy, laughing coldly, hastily wiping her eye with her sleeve. "We'll help him. Don't worry," said Karis. Lucy dabbed her eyes some more as she fought the waves of guilt and anger crashing over her. She hated what the disease had done to her body, what it had done to Lopez, what it would do to Adrian.
"Promise me, Karis. Whatever happens, you'll help me find a cure."
"You know pharmacology isn't my domain, right?" said Karis.
"I vote you change majors," said Maurice.
Lucy looked at Karis imploringly. She needed to know there was hope.
"That's not to say I can't try,"
Karis added, sensing Lucy's despair.
"I guess someone ought to, anyhow."
She brought the car to a crawl. A police cordon stretched across the road ahead. An officer was wearily waving them past.
"Wait up,"
said Lucy, sitting up straight. Her bleary eyes zeroed in on the crime scene.
"Take us closer, Karis. Tell him we were sent by the department to investigate. Show them your pass," said Lucy.
Karis relayed the lie to the soldier who waved them through.
"I hope you people have strong stomachs,"
he said as they proceeded past. A second soldier was roughly escorting a white armbanded journalist away from the cordon. The reporter glared jealously at Lucy's group, trying to catch them on camera as they advanced without impediment. Lucy watched in the wing mirror as the soldier tore the reporter's phone from his hands and stamped on it, crushing the screen beneath the heel of his boot. If the prison hadn't been enough, the sight now greeting them tipped Maurice over the edge.
"I think I'm gonna be sick,"
he said, leaning out of the car. Karis brought them to a halt by the cordon. Lucy's stomach churned as she climbed out. A policewoman inspecting the site came forwards from the sidewalk. Lucy did a double take. She wasn't used to seeing regular law enforcement officers in the city. She preemptively flashed her own health department pass, reassuring the policewoman that they weren't more journalists.
"It's not the creatures, if that's what you're here for,"
said the officer, resuming her inspection of the scene.
"Who would do something like this?" said Karis.
Lucy stared grimly at the bloodied body. It was slumped on the ground, backed up against the glass storefront of an abandoned dry cleaner's. Blood splattered the glass and the sidewalk beneath it.
The person was curled up in a ball. One arm shielded their face, while the other was outstretched. Both of their legs were broken. The skin on their forearm was raw with lesions, which had ruptured across the victim's dark, black skin.
"It's like I said, no way the creatures did this. Though this is the fifth one in 2 days. I'm surprised you guys are only looking into it now," said the policewoman.
Beside her, the sidewalk had been smashed up into pieces. Lucy's eyes moved from the broken curb to the victim's body. Chunks of blood-splattered rubble lay in and around the person's pulverized flesh. Sprayed onto the glass facade behind the victim was a single word: sinner. They parked the department car several blocks away from the sanctuary. Lucy had guided them to a house which had been the site of a previous D4 attack, hoping it would give them a credible alibi should anyone challenge their movements. She checked anxiously over her shoulder as they hurried towards the blacked-out law office on foot. The plant growth covering it by now was substantial. In the old world, one might have mistaken the myriad of lilac blues and rusty oranges for a designer living wall. "Lucy," began Lopez, greeting her with a soft, wonky smile as they entered the briefing room.
"What are you doing back so—"
His voice broke off as he spotted Maurice, who waved a cheerful hand.
"Great to see you again, Major. You're looking, really well,"
gushed the Canadian, crassly staring at the mottled bleach marks across Lopez's skin and his sunken shoulder. With a roar, Lopez launched himself at the traitor, tackling him to the ground. He laid into Maurice, wailing on him with both fists. The Canadian cowered, crying out to the others for help. Karis tried to intervene, but Lucy held her back. Lopez continued to pummel Maurice, cursing and growling as he unloaded all of his rage and hurt on this deserving enemy. With a yelp, the Canadian rolled over, throwing Lopez off and kicking him away. Lopez immediately launched himself back at the Canadian, and the pair wrestled across the floor. Lucy's face fell. Suddenly, Maurice was on top and kneeling across Lopez's torso. The Major grunted and salivated as he tried to strike Maurice, but his sunken left arm was trapped under the Canadian's legs. With his free hand, he tried to claw at Maurice's face, but the Canadian batted him away with ease. Maurice let out an astonished, triumphant cry and raised his fist, taking aim at Lopez's face. Lucy kicked Maurice hard in the shoulder, booting him onto his side. "Enough," she said, looming over him, glowering. Her boot was raised, ready to stamp on his neck. Maurice raised his arms in surrender and let out a cutesy smile, clearly proud of his underdog victory. Lucy turned to help Lopez, but the Major was already up, standing. He paced up and down the far side of the room with his back to the assembly, nursing his crippled side. She approached him and placed a delicate hand on his back.
"Are you okay?" she whispered.
"Fine," he grunted, shrugging her off sharply.
"The love story continues," said Maurice, sitting contentedly on the ground and ostentatiously retying his bootlaces, as if that were the reason for him being down there.
"Honestly, it's like you don't want to live," snapped Lucy.
"Relax, geez. I'd forgotten how uptight the pair of you are about everything," said Maurice, dusting himself down.
"Is someone going to tell me what the hell he's doing here, walking free?" spat Lopez.
The door opened and Chris stepped in, fully uniformed.
"Everything okay in here?"
"Lucy, Fleece said you had returned. I'm glad to see you. I hoped I would get a chance to thank you in person for what you did for me."
He seized her hand and shook it enthusiastically.
"Who's the new guy?"
he added, gesturing to Maurice, who had by now picked himself up.
"He's a traitor," said Lopez.
"Yes, he's a piece of shit, but we need him. Besides, he's one of us now," said Lucy.
"The hell he is. I'm not lining up to be stabbed in the back a second time," said Lopez.
"Listen to me, Ed, Chris. I've seen the prison. The blood farm, whatever they're calling it. The government's ramping up production. They're draining thousands of infecteds like us and keeping them incarcerated in a state of delirium. The prisoners only partially recover. They're bled repeatedly until they become unviable and then get terminated. And I think my father-in-law's in there."
Her voice quaked as she acknowledged the sentence she'd given Adrian.
"We have to rescue them," she continued, clearing her throat.
"Maurice is our chance to get in. His city struck a trade deal with ours, food for blood.
The first shipment's being transferred tomorrow at noon. Our best chance of pulling this off is while Maurice is here, and when no one at the prison knows what the shipment routine is.
For the record, I think this is all super gross, by the way, said Maurice.
Chris probed Lucy, Karis, and Maurice on the details. Lopez brooded from the sidelines as the group devised a plan. Maurice was predictably in favor of the plan that involved getting out as quickly as possible. Chris and Lucy overruled him, agreeing that they had one shot at getting access, and they had to use it to liberate as many infecteds as they could from the main prison. The adjacent second site would be handled by a follow-up team.
So, we hijack the first collection truck and use it to get to the prison. Once we're inside, we disable the guards and open the gates to more trucks. I estimate we'll have 10 minutes before the army is mobilized, so we'll have to be quick.
There are only a handful of guards. If we can disable them before they use their radios, we could have longer, maybe even an hour before anyone at control notices. We'll have to be stealthy. Going in as soldiers is our best bet, said Karis.
It's important that the trucks scatter afterwards. We need to dilute the military's resources as much as possible to maximize the number of vehicles that reach the gate, said Lucy.
There's no way you can evacuate thousands of people in 10 minutes. You'll never get them loaded quickly enough, said Maurice.
He's right, said Lopez from the far side of the room. We need to buy more time. We need a diversion.
You okay? She said, stepping into Lopez's room that evening. It was hardly the Bellagio. As the only person to have suffered such severe disfigurement, Lopez was confined to the sanctuary in a way others weren't. For his sanity, he'd carved out a small slither of privacy in a stationary cupboard. Lucy found something reassuring about the cozy space. Staplers, pens, toner cartridges, and other office goods filled the shelves. They were softly lit up by a floor lamp positioned next to Lopez's sleeping bag.
Yeah, all G, he said crisply, not looking up from his book.
You can talk to me, you know, she said, sitting down cross-legged on the mattress. He snapped the book shut.
And say what? That I'm weak now? That I can't take down a pathetic, sniveling traitor like Maurice? That I can't save my own child from the same man who did this to me? He fumed.
Lucy waited for his breathing to level out. He went back to his book, tearing it open to a different page where he pretended to read. I found Ruth. She'll be at the gate tomorrow, said Lucy. Lopez ignored her. His eyes glared angrily at the paper without moving. Chris said he's put out word across the other sanctuaries. He reckons it'll be tight, but we'll have enough trucks, said Lucy tentatively. Lopez continued to seethe. She reached across and grabbed the book from his hands and slammed it down on the mattress.
Talk to me, she demanded. I was reading that, he protested, reaching for it. No, you weren't. But I'd like to know what was going around that angry head of yours before we risk our lives together tomorrow.
I knew this guy once, a real good soldier. Didn't care much for having live wires on his team. I'm starting to see where he was coming from, said Lucy. Lopez slumped back against the wall and glared at her.
You shouldn't have interfered. That fight was between me and Maurice.
Sure, I should have stood by and watched him pummel you. That would have been a great experience for everyone.
It wasn't your place to...
It was my place, Ed. You would have done the same for me.
And you'd have hated me for it.
Correct, said Lucy with a smile. Lopez contemplated for a minute, suddenly taking a stern interest in the assortment of staple sizes on the row beside him.
I get it, okay? Said Lucy, gently extending a hand.
You don't get it at all. I used to be worth something. Now I'm just... this, he said, as tears filled his eyes.
Look around you, Ed. You really think you're the only one who's upset about the changes happening to them? This building is filled with people going through all kinds of trauma. I know this sounds harsh, but you need to get a grip.
Easy for you to say. You were useless before we got sick.
Excuse me? I saved your ass more times than I needed to, you self-pitying jerk.
Then maybe you shouldn't have bothered.
Oh, so I should have just watched you hang yourself. Has it ever occurred to you that some people might want you to stay alive?
What are you talking about? Said Lopez, taken aback.
In Harvey's lab. I found you...
Lucy faltered as the pain of the memory resurfaced sharply. They sat in silence for a moment.
I don't remember that.
How can you not?
I was hallucinating. It was hard to tell what was real and what wasn't. I saw the rope burns around my neck when I woke up properly here, but
I figured it must have been something Harvey did. I never thought I'd be the sort of person who would, you know.
You'd be thrilled to know I tried to finish you off with an overdose, said Lucy darkly.
What?
I had them cut you down and begged Harvey to let you recover, but he refused. He wasn't willing to stop the experiments. He considered your actions to be a sign of progress, that he should do more. You were trapped in the hallucinatory phase with no prospect of escape. So I did what you wanted. Or at least I tried.
You clearly did a sucky job. Remind me never to hire you as a hit woman.
But for the record, I appreciate the effort. Don't screw around with me, said Lucy bitterly. I'm serious. Even though you have no memory of actually wanting to die?
I didn't know what was going on, but I know I was suffering. I remember the pain, even if I don't recall everything that Harvey did. I'm glad you had my back, even if it was in the lethal injection kind of way.
Wow, that is probably the most fucked up thing you've ever said.
Worse than that time I tried to apologize? Said Lopez with a flicker of a smile.
Way worse. Your apologies were poetry compared to that, thank you. Lopez fixed her with a wonky smile and wiped a tear from his eye, laughing. His laughter petered out into reflection.
I'm worried, Lucy. If I can't kick one traitor's ass, how am I going to save my kid? Am I even capable?
You can still shoot, right?
Yeah.
Then what's the problem? You're an experienced soldier and a strong tactician. That's the person I want by my side tomorrow. He looked down and nodded gratefully. I'm worried, too. I have no idea what state my father-in-law will be in tomorrow. If he doesn't make it, I'll never forgive myself.
Then we'll make sure we get him out.
He tilted his head sincerely. Thanks. She felt deeply conflicted about accepting his help. It felt so disrespectful to Dan's memory, but she had no choice.
Will you stay a while? I could really use the company. I miss my kid. And my old kids. I can't explain it other than, well, it hurts like nothing else in the world.
Lucy shifted closer and put an arm around him. I promise we'll get your child back. We've got a plan, and it's going to work.